Okay, so we are holding on Volvo Amadeus, second line, the wide line. So one of the things we were talking about yesterday was the various dinim, where we had a din where two people have roofs that are on the same level but on opposite sides of Rishus HaRabim. We said each one of them has to build half a mica and make sure that they overlap horizontally so that one of them can't possibly look in on the other while he's using his roof. So now, more dinim on that subject. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Gaga samach lachatzah chaveret. If you have one person's roof is next to the other person's chatzah. So we're talking about, you know, it's on the slope of a mountain, like some of these places in Eretz Yisrael or whatever, where you have one person's roof can be on the same level as the next person's chatzah. Oisalei mica gavoya dalad amas. Then you have to make a mica. You have to make a wall between them 4 amas tall because of hezekria. Avo ben gagla gagloi. However, Shmuel saying that if you have just one roof adjacent to the next, you do not need this mica of 4 amas over there. Because
any other case you do,
when the difference is, and Rashi says we learned at the very beginning of the Masechta, because a chotzer people are constantly using, therefore a chotzer there's a problem of hezekria,
right.
And if you have one of them as a chotzer and the other one as a roof, the problem is the guy is going to be using his chotzer, and all of a sudden the other guy is going to go up onto his roof, which is not necessarily at any given time, and all of a sudden he's going to start peeking in, and the person from the chotzer into the chotzer, and the one who owns the chotzer is not going to know even that the other guy is going up on the roof to keep an eye out for him. But you don't need it between one roof and the next because people use their roofs infrequently enough that if one of them is on his roof and is going to do anything semi-private, he'll be able to see immediately if the other guy, it's unusual enough that the other guy is going to be on his roof anyway, so therefore he'll know to keep an eye out.
Okay.
Not Ayin Hara, we said because you want to be able to use your chatzer in privacy. Yeah, you're intruding. Right, right. Okay. Rav Nachman di Deyoma, whereas that was Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel. Then Rav Nachman himself disagrees and says, no, Ein Zokah for Dalad Amos, even if it's between a roof and a chotzer, you don't need a 4 amah tall fence. Aval Zokah Mechitza Sasora. However, you do need a Mechitza. Close the door, please. You do need a Mechitza 10 tfachim tall, though, in that case. So the question is, Lamai. The question is, Lamai. We can understand why you would need a fence 4 amas tall. Why there would be a situation where you need a fence 4 amas tall? Hezekria, as we talked about. But what would be the logic that Rav Nachman himself is saying that you need a fence only 10 tefachim tall? Ela hezekria. If you're making the fence for the sake of preventing hezekria, abamas, you need 4 amas tall for that. Ela
mitzvah on top of the roof.
We're talking about, in other words, you have a roof and you have a chotzer adjacent to it.
At the same level,
or more or less the same level. Yeah, more or less the same level. So if you're going to say that it's hezekria, you need 4 amas. Even nitvas olav kaganav, if it's going to be in order to demonstrate that the guy is trespassing, that this way the guy can't argue, for example, well, I didn't realize where the borderline is. You don't need 10 tefachim at all. The mesipas ba'almasagia. All you need for that is a mesipas. All you need is some pegs stuck into the ground to show where the borderline is. You don't need four amas, not ten tefachim. Trespassing, you don't even need 10 tefachim. You need less than that. And is it that you want to prevent, for example, that you'll have one person's kid, you'll have one person's goats or sheep won't go from his roof to the other guy's chotzer or vice versa? In that case, all you need is a kind of fence that'll prevent the gdi or the tleh from running through, which is the shear for that usually is 3 tefachim. The point is the shear for that is 3 tefachim. So for example, all you need is that you'll have some stakes in the ground less than 3 tefachim apart. Again, they don't necessarily need to be 10 tefachim tall, and that'll cover the situation. So why is Rav Nachman saying that you need a mechitza of 10 tefachim? The answer is
how much more than 4 amas?
10 tefachim is much less than 4 amas. An amah is 6 tefachim. So 4 amas would be 24 tefachim.
So what should he say around that? You don't need anything?
That's what we're asking. Why is it, I can understand why Shmuel would say you need 4 amas, hezekria. Why is Rav Nachman himself saying that you need only 10 tefachim? What is a 10 tefach fence going to accomplish? The answer is la'olam l'nitfas olav kaganav. The 10 tefach fence will accomplish that if the other person trespasses, it'll show that he's going in there as a ganav. He's going there illegally.
Okay.
Because you're asking in that case, why do you need full 10 tefachim? Why don't you just use a masipas? Put some pegs in the ground.
Right.
The reason is like this. V'mesipas motzi mishtamet lei, because if all you have is a mesipas, the other guy can have an excuse. He can say, well, I'm on your chotzer because omer mamtzure kamamtzirna. He might say, for example, I was stretching and I accidentally got over into your part, or different other mefarshim talk about different possibilities. He can say, for example, I dropped something and I went into your area to get it, or whatever. He can have some excuse. The mechitza, tassara, loy mati mishamitle. If it's low. But if it's a mechitza 10 tefachim tall, loy mati mishamitle. He's not going to be able to get away with any excuse. That's why we need a mechitza 10 tefachim. And by the way, Mephoshim point out, I mean, so what are you saying? That the one who owns, so what are you saying, for example, the one who owns the roof is obligated to put up a mechitza 10 tefachim to prevent himself from going and then going as a ganav into the other guy's chotzer? What's the logic? What it is we're saying, because without that, the other guy can't use his chotzer freely, because he's always concerned that the other guy is going to trespass on it. Therefore, as part of, so they say, it's not even really a matter of hezekriah, because again, then you need four amos. It's more a matter of hilchus shchenim. You, as his neighbor, are obligated to make sure that he has the full use of his chotzer, which means that you have to make sure that you have some kind of barrier over there to prevent yourself from... That's not the 10 tefachim. That's what we're talking about. Less than 10 tefachim, you can always claim, I was stretching and accidentally, whatever, I dropped something, whatever, yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Maisvi. Okay, I have a contradiction, though. A Braisa says, Im hoyo chatzeru l'mayla megaga shachaveri, if you have one person's chotzer is higher than the other person's roof. So before we were talking about the roof and the chotzer are on equal levels. Now we're talking about the chotzer is even higher. It's an even steeper mountain or a shorter house or whatever. So the chotzer is taller than the guy's roof. Ein niskokin loy. Then we don't have to bother with it. Rashi has the gear to ein zokuk loy, which means in this case the owner of the chotzer is not obligated to make any kind of barrier. Because Rashi says, since again a roof is not used that often, it's easy enough for the owner of the chotzer to make sure to not use his chotzer when the other guy is coming up to his roof. Mele, if they were on the same.
To see because he's higher.
On the contrary, actually, Tosfos points out in a related case, which we're going to talk about in a few lines, that for example, it's true the guy could be on his roof and be able to see the one in his chotzer when he's standing up or when he's by the edge of his chotzer.
Right.
Nevertheless, though, because a roof is used less often, you're not obligated to put up any kind of barrier.
At the same level than you are.
That's what we're asking. That's what we're asking based on this braisa. My lav ein niskok and like wow. L'chor of the braisa means we don't concern ourselves with it at all. Nothing needs to be put up. Not 10 tefachim, certainly not 4 amos. That contradicts both Rav Nachman and Shmuel,
right,
who said that you need 4 amos or 10 tefachim as the case may be. But according to this braisa, it sounds like you don't need anything.
Right.
The answer is. No, the braisa means you're not obligated to build a 4 amah tall wall. However, you are obligated to build a 10 tefach wall.
No, I mean it's equal, but like you're throwing something and it falls over.
But that's the thing. If they're equal, then that's why you need a barrier between them to prevent the person from being able to say, well, I dropped something over.
Nobody might have threw something.
If you threw something, that's your problem. Don't throw things out of your chutzpah in a way that's going to land in my roof. And if you do, then knock on my door and ask permission to go up.
But we understand that the chutzpah is higher than the roof, right?
Understood, but still, it's the same.
So why still would you need something?
Okay, so there are actually different mephoshim talk about this. It depends how much of a difference in height there is between them. It's true. Some, for example, the Rima Gash talks about that. Yes, if there's a difference of several amos in height between them, then it's true. You don't need anything.
No.
Then the braisa can well mean you don't need anything,
right?
Because then, yeah, nitvasolov Tuganov, just from the fact that he's climbing, why is he climbing down there in the first? But even so, no, because even so, you could still need 10 tefachim, because otherwise he may claim, I dropped something over there. I was by the edge of my chot, so I dropped something. It landed on your roof. I went in to get it. When really he didn't go in there to get it, he went in there in order to spy on his neighbor. So in order to avoid that, even in that case, we need a mechitza 10 tefachim. Itma. So now we have a related discussion. Shtei chatzeres zula maila mizu. What if you have two chatzeres? Now we're not talking about a roof and a chatzer or two roofs. Now we're talking about two chatzeres, where one is higher than the other. So now for sure, there's no question you need a wall between them. There's no question hezekriah. We'll clear on that from the Mishnah. There's two chatzeres, but one is higher than the other. One is higher. Well, we'll see in a second. But one of them is higher than the other. Now the problem is like this, basically. Let's say, for example, one of them is 2 amos taller than the other. You're going to need, in order to build a stable wall, you're going to need 2 tefachim that go along the height between the one and the other, and then you're going to need an additional 4 amos on top of it.
You're going to need two approximate
lengths. So, two amas. Let's say, for example, this one is up here, this one's down here, and let's say there's a 2 ama difference in height between them. In order, you can't build a wall just up over here, because if it's supposed to be half in his property and half in his property, what, half of this wall is just going to be standing in the air. Of necessity, you're going to have to build first a substructure. You're going to have to build a retaining wall 2 amas tall until the height of the upper chatzer, and then you're going to need to build 4 amas on top of that. Now, the problem with that is, why should the upper guy have to pay for a 6 ama tall wall when, as for, you know, you only need to pay for 4 amas? So therefore, like this. Amar Rav Huna, tachten bonim kenegdei ha'ola. What we do is like this. The one who has the lower chatzer starts building all on his own until he reaches the height of the other guy's chatzer. So in this scenario, for example, 2 amas, and he has to pay for it all himself. Mefarshim do say, most Rishonim do say, that the space for it will come from both of them. Meaning, in other words, what we'll do is we'll carve out a little bit of, we'll carve out a 3 tefachim or whatever it is from the edge of this guy's chatzer and use that as half the space to build the wall. But all the materials of those 2 amas, let's say, are going to have to come from the bottom guy, from the lower guy, yeah. He will pay for all of that. And then the upper one starts sharing in it. Now the upper one starts paying his share toward the 4 amas on top of that.
So he did the question, if the person moves in and there was no wall, and then he says, oh, I need a wall, he's allowed to support.
So the Rif, we talked about at the very beginning, that the Rif mentions the idea that Hezek Ria is one of those things that we don't say there's ever a chazaka on. We're going to learn in our Gemara. We learned yesterday a little bit about the concept where sometimes if you have an established right to be able to do something in a chatzer, you're allowed to continue doing it even if the guy eventually says I don't like it anymore. For example, to have rain from your roof drip into his chatzer, let's say, or whatever, things like that. But there are certain kinds of things that you can never establish a chazak on, because the guy can always, at some later date, complain, you know what, I thought I could handle it, but now I see I can't. The Rif says that Hezek Ria is one of them.
So any time
he could always say that. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
So in this case, what we do is, again, the lower person builds the bottom, let's say, 2 amas, and then the top guy starts assisting and starts paying half the cost towards the remaining part of the wall. That's what Rav Huna says. Whereas Rav Chisda says that no, actually, even the one on top still has to help with the lower part of the wall. One idea is, before we should say, the reason is because 50-50, even with the bottom part, even though it's not connected to his chatzer at all, some of the Rishonim say the logical reason behind it is because that part of the wall is necessary, otherwise the part of the wall above it is not going to be stable, so therefore he has a need for it as well, even though he's not actually using it. Okay, Tosfos asks the question, let's look at it the other way. Once you have a 4 ama tall wall, the one on bottom is not going to be able to see the one in the upper chatzer. Why should he have to pay for any more of the expenses? So let's say, fine, he paid for 2 amas of retaining wall. Now let's say, fine, he paid half his share for the next 2 amas. At that point, it's 4 amas above the level of his chatzer. It's only 2 amas above the level of his chatzer. Fine, now you're the one who will be causing Hezek Ria. You're the one who should be having to pay the rest. Why are we saying that I on the bottom should have to pay for those remaining 2 amas? Sometimes we'll give a couple of answers. One of them is, let's say, for example, we're talking about the chatzer itself. The lower chatzer is on a slant. Part of it is lower, and part of it is on an equal level. So therefore, we could always go to that part and see from that part.
Why can't it be on both of them, like the one on the bottom, and one on the top, like this?
Well, we're saying, the one on the bottom only needs to do 4. That's what we're saying. If the one on the bottom builds 2 amas, let's say, to make it equal to the height of the other chatzer, and then the other one starts building 4 amas above that. We're asking, Tosfos is asking, he already paid for 2 amas, why does he need to pay for another 4? So one answer is, let's say his chatzer is slanted. One half of it, one part of it is even over here, and the other side is lower.
I thought you meant it would go up like this, so if he's standing in this part of the chatzer, he can
That's a different answer that some of Farshim say, that if the chatzer is long, then yeah. But Tosfos also says, the other thing is, when the one from the upper chatzer is standing up, still, the one from the lower chatzer will be able to see him if the wall is only 2 amas above the point where it goes down. Yeah. Okay.
It has to be brother. It has to be 4 amas.
That's what we're saying, and that's why the bottom one has to help with the full 4 amas that are above the point where the cliff goes off. Yeah.
No, but why does he have to build the other ones? He could just be like this, and then the other wall like this.
Well, that's the point. Each of them has to give half the space for the wall. If he were to build a wall over here, half on his space, what's the other half of it on empty air? So there has to be a wall underneath it.
Like, this starts from here and goes, like, to here, and this starts from here and goes, like, to here.
You could have, that's 2 separate walls. You don't need 2 separate walls. You just need 1 wall. Okay.
No, I combine them.
Okay, that's basically what we're talking about. Okay. Tanya Kava Seder, very good though. Tanya Kava Seder of Chister, we learn a Braise there in accordance with Rav Chister. Shtei Chaser of Zulu Maile Mizu. Lo Yomer Ha'elyon Ha'eredi Boini Mekinegdiv Oila. Hello. The one on top cannot just say, I'll build the part that's above my level. He has to help with the lower part also, that's below his level, which is what Rav Chista said.
Right.
And the Braita continues, which we quoted before, if his chaser was higher than the other guy's roof, then we don't have to bother, because then we said roofs are not used as commonly as chaseres, and therefore nothing is necessary except actually according to Rav Nachman, we still need a mechitza of asarat tzvachim just to prevent nitkasol of yaganim, just so the guy doesn't, so that if the guy trespasses, it'll be obvious that he trespassed.
Whenever the chaser is higher, that's different.
When the chaser is higher than the roof.
Okay. The other way, not.
Right. If the roof is higher than the chaser, there's also going to be hezek riyah from the roof. But then the problem is the guy in the chaser is not going to realize when the other person is on his roof. So the one who has the roof,
if he's on the roof, you can realize.
If you're down in your chaser doing your business and the other guy is standing up on his roof and peeking in on you, you're not going to know.
If they're
next to each other though, then you would have to. We're talking about the other way around. If you're on the roof, which is lower than the chaser, and you have to look up to the chaser, then all you need is nitpa salaf gaganav. All you need is a mechitza to prevent nitpa salaf gaganav. You don't have an issue of hezek riyah. Now a whole different case. Since we were talking about cases with neighbors, with roofs, and chaseros and whatever, now we're going to have some dinim which actually relate a little more to what we learned at the end of Bava Metzia about two people who have a first level and a second level of a house. So, Hanhu Beit today, there were these two people, they have a diary, they were living, one person was living downstairs, one was living upstairs. Chad have a diary, loyu, Chad had a diary tatori, one was living upstairs, one downstairs. Itbar tatori. Now the lower apartment broke. What do we mean by broke? So there's a few different explanations. Rabbeinu Gershom says that it literally means the walls of the bottom one partially collapsed. So that caused the top floor to settle down onto it. So now the it's still standing. It's not in danger of collapse. But now the bottom apartment is shorter than it was. Right. Rashi says that it means that the lower level sank into the ground. Same idea. And the Rambam learns that what it means is the beams that hold up the floor, the second floor, got bent. Not completely caved in, that would be learned in Bava Metzia, but they got bent. So now, like, there's less vertical room than there was there when they were stripped. Anyway, okay, so that was the situation. So the downstairs neighbor says to the upstairs neighbor, come, let's rebuild it. Again, what we mean by rebuild it, that according to Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom, it would mean let's rebuild, let's tear down the whole house and rebuild it. According to the Rambam, it would just mean you move out for a while, let's fix these broken roof beams, these ceiling beams, and then, Amalei, so the upstairs person says, why should I bother? I'm not shopping Kaldeir. Now I'm living here just fine. It's not my problem. Amalei, so the one downstairs says, okay, fine, you don't have to share in the cost. I'll tear the whole thing down and I'll rebuild it. It's all out of my own money. Omar, the one upstairs, says, "Less the just to the medebe." Then I'm not around any place to live. Omalei, so the one downstairs says, "I know egal lachaduchta." Okay, I'll rent you a place to live. Omalei, so the one upstairs says, "Like tarachna, I can't be bothered to move out,
You prefer paying for the wall?
No. He's saying I don't want to move out. I'm fine where I am. He's saying I'm living upstairs. I'm just my apartment is just fine. You're having a problem with your apartment, not my problem. So the one downstairs says Loi Kamitzali. I can't live in a place like this. So the one upstairs says not my problem. Shufa kreisach ba'ul, b'shufa kreisach ha'puk. Bend over to the waist and go in, and bend out over to the waist and go out. That's how Rashi learns. It Tosfos learns that shuf means crawl. Crawl on your stomach, in and out, if need be. It's not my concern. Fine, they should have Avos Yisrael, but we first have to talk about what the actual din is. Rav Chama b'dinah kama akir. Rav Chama says, the one upstairs has a valid point. You cannot consider it that he's doing midas doim, where we'll learn later on in the perek, because he does have valid arguments over here. He's living perfectly well in his place, whether it's lower down or the beams have bent or whatever it is, but he has no problem in his place. The other guy still has a semi-livable place. However, that only applies if the beams of the ceiling are not within 10 tefachim of the ground. have a motuk shuri lamata ma'asara, but if the beams have already reached the point where they're within 10 tefachim of the ground,
it's nothing.
When it comes to Hilchos Sukkah, for example, we say the minimum height of a sukkah is 10 tefachim. Less than that, the Gemara calls over there dira srucha. It's considered like a disgusting or unappetizing or whatever dwelling. Same principle over here. As long as it's within 10, as long as it's at least 10 tefachim above the ground, yes, it'll be hard. Yes, you're going to have to bend double to get in and out. But you can, at least in principle, live in such a place. Therefore, the one upstairs has a valid argument. That look, your house, your downstairs is meshubad to me, as we learned at the end of Matiya. Until your house is completely unlivable, I shouldn't be obligated to vacate my house for you to fix it.
Okay,
so,
I think it's 20
about 30 inches. Is about 30 inches. It's about 30 inches. 30 inches according to the Rabbi Chaim Na, 40 inches according to the Chazon Ish. It would be hard, but it's manageable.
Very hard.
I have a motto, Kshuri Lamakam Asar. Come on, so you stand like this. So what do you do in a sukkah of 10 tefachim? You crouch down, whatever. You sit on the floor, yeah, come on, no. Okay.
You're supposed to, the minhag is you stand,
but if you have to sit, you stand.
The minhag?
No, come on. V'hani mila d'lai motu k'shuri l'mata ma'asara, av'al motu k'shuri l'mata ma'asara, but if the beams have already gone down within 10 tefachim of the ground, mati omale, then he has, the one downstairs has the ability to say, l'mata miyur reshus adidihu. Look, below 10 tefachim is already my reshus. Yes, my house is meshubad to you, but not to that extent. It's meshubad to you even to the extent we learned in Bava Metzia, for example, that if the top floor becomes unlivable, you can come live downstairs with me. But as we learned over there, I still have the right to continue living there. Like this, the place is totally unlivable. Therefore, he can say, therefore, v'loy meshabad loch, that part, below 10 tefachim, is not under shibud to you. And therefore, I have the right to tell you to leave and let me fix the place. Now, all this only applies if they didn't make any specific condition when they first built the house of what's going to happen if it starts sinking or the beams get bent or whatever. But if they made such a condition, then they tear it down and they rebuild it. Now, that part that Ramban says is pashut. The reason why we're saying that is as an introduction to the next question. Because the question is, even if they made a t'nai, if they didn't specifically say how much it has to sink in before we trigger it, at what point is that t'nai triggered? Obviously, you're not going to say if the house sinks in an inch or two, then already we trigger the t'nai. At what point is it triggered? Where do we draw the line?
We said 10
tefachim. No. That's if they made no t'nai in the first place. Here we're talking about they made a t'nai. The one downstairs says, because like this, the first case was, the original case was, we built the house. We never made any t'nai what's going to happen if the bottom one starts collapsing. Now it collapsed. Now he has a problem. We say until 10 tefachim he can be expected to live there. Right. Now, well, whatever. I mean, the bottom one is just shorter. However, it sank into the ground or whatever it is. Yeah. So now we're talking about when they first built the house, the one downstairs said, we're building this house jointly. You'll live upstairs, I'll live downstairs, but I want to make a condition as part of it that if the house starts sinking or whatever, then I should have the ability anytime to tell you, move out, we need to tear it down and rebuild it. So the question is, at what point do we trigger that? Just because it's settled an inch or two, obviously, is not enough. So, Omer Rabbanon Kamei de Rabba Mishmei de Marzutra Bered Rav Nachman, de Omer Mishmei de Rav Nachman. So the Rabbanon said in front of Rabba, in the name of Marzutra, the son of Rav Nachman, who said it in the name of his father, Rav Nachman, that the amount we say, at what point we trigger that condition, is Ka'oisa Shashaninu. It's similar to what we learn later on in our Masechta. In the sixth parak, we have a discussion over there. There's a couple of Mishnayos that deal with rules for contractors. If you contracted to build a certain kind of building, and no size is specified, what the minimum that it can be considered that type of building, that you fulfilled your contract. So the Mishnah gives various sizes for different types of buildings. And then it says, what about the height? That as far as the square footage, in other words, what about the height? The height of the building should be equal to half the length plus half the width. In other words, the average of the length and the width. We learned that from the Heichel in the first Beis Hamikdash. The Heichel, the Kodesh in the first Beis Hamikdash, was 40 amos long, 20 amos wide, and 30 tall. So we see that the height was the average of the length and the width. So therefore, that becomes the standard for any building. So therefore, these Rabbanon are telling Rabba that Rav Nachman said that, let's say, for example, the downstairs apartment is, I don't know, 20 by 30 feet, let's say. So the proper height of such a thing should be 25 feet, the average of the length and the width. If it gets any lower than 25 feet, then we can trigger the deal and tear down the house and rebuild it.
You measure?
Yeah. Omer lehu Rabba. So Rabba tells them that can't be. Lava min lehu lechitlu be buki tzriki b'Rav Nachman. Haven't I told you before you should not hang empty bottles on Rav Nachman, which is a figure of speech. Empty bottles mean like statements that can't possibly be correct. How can you say Rav Nachman said such a thing?
Yeah.
No, there's obviously a difference between building a house to begin with and b'di'evit, where it's already sinking into the ground, and when you at what point you're entitled to tear it down and rebuild and force the other guy out and rebuild it. No, rather, Hochi Amar Rav Nachman, you should know Rav Nachman said, the rule is, ki d'dayri inchi, you go according to when the house gets to the point where people would not be able to live there normally. Meaning, not like before, again, the 10 tefachim was the extreme.
But
because we made a condition, that's the difference. Because we made a condition.
Without specifying
the amount, right. So, a kama, what's considered ki d'dayri inchi? How much is that? Omer Rav Huna, Brei Rav Yeshua, ki heichi da'ili isurisa d'mechuza. It would have to be that the house is still tall enough that you could bring in a bundle, such as the ones they make, a bundle of reeds or whatever, that such as they make in mechuza, the hodder, and be able to turn around with it in all directions. The Rambam learns that it's talking about you put it on your head, various other Rishonim talk about you put it on your back or your shoulder, whatever the point is.
You stand with the bundle,
let's say, on your head, according to the Rambam. So you yourself, let's say, are 6 feet tall. The bundle itself is, I don't know, an amma thick. So if the beams, if the ceiling is still at least seven feet above the ground, above the floor, everywhere, then you can't yet trigger this condition because you can still live there comfortably.
When it's less than that, then you can.
Some Mephoshim say that's in terms of their times. In our times, it would be a similar kind of thing. Whatever the normal thing is that people usually do in their houses, you should still be able to do over there.
That's when they have stipulated.
No. If they stipulate an actual amount, they didn't stipulate an actual amount, but they did make a stipulation.
It's amazing to me that it's possible that the second floor can go down so low and it won't ruin the house.
Well, again, that's why Rabbeinu Gershom explains that the walls of the bottom one actually broke, and therefore it shifted down. And maybe that's also why Rashi learned it sank into the ground. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, it sank into the
ground. That's how Rashi learns it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because there was a lot of mud there.
Yeah, okay. All right. Onward. Now, there was once a case where a person was building a wall near the other guy's window, which we learned before. We learned the other day that he has the ability to prevent it because you're blocking my light. Not Hezekiah. Well, there is Hezekiah. We talked about that also. But more to the point is also if the wall is too close to the window, it blocks the light. So in the second parak, we'll learn the details about how far away it has to be. So so the one who owns the window says, you're blocking my light. So the other one argues, fine. Then in that case, don't make me tear down my wall. I'll seal up your window over here. What I'll do is I'll bring contractors to make you a new window higher up in the wall, higher than my wall, so your light won't be blocked.
Yeah, but the window is going to be very high.
Some Mephoshim say, we're going to see later on at the end of the discussion, that we're not talking about this wasn't a house where the guy was living. It turns out that this was a house he was using primarily for storage.
Okay.
So that being the case, he doesn't have as much of an argument that the window is in an inconvenient place. If he actually used it for living in, sure, he could have used that argument instead. So the other one, so the one who owns the window says, Kamaris Leilashi Soy, yeah, but if you do that, you're going to weaken my wall. Although the banging and hacking away at the wall is going to weaken it. So the other one says, okay, so Sarna Lacha Lashisa Chadukta the Kavi, fine. What I'll do is I'll tear down the part of the wall until the level of your current window, or until the level of the new window, maybe, whatever. Over Ninala, I'll build your new window. Down to where the window is now. Over Ninala, I'll rebuild straight from there up. He's offering like this. You have your window over here. You're saying I'm blocking you.
Right.
You're saying that if I close up this window and hack out a new window over here, it'll weaken your wall. Fine. We'll tear down the wall up until the level of your current window. We'll rebuild it with new bricks. Up until the level where the new window is supposed to be, and then I'll make windows in this new wall that are higher than my wall. Omalei, so the other one argues, Ashisa mitata yatiko omalei ochadato lekaima. Yes, but a wall that the bottom of it is old and the top of it is new is not going to be as stable because Rashi says, for example, the old mortar is not going to stick as well to the old dry mortar is not going to stick as well to the new mortar.
It's weaker.
It's weaker, yeah.
What's mortar?
Mortar is what you use to hold bricks together. Yeah. The Rambam, it's interesting, actually, when the Rambam brings this case in Yad HaChazaka, he leaves out that particular detail, and some of the Mefarshim say that maybe the Rambam didn't hold of it in the Gemara, or maybe not he didn't hold of it in the Gemara, the guy was arguing it, but maybe that would not be really considered a valid claim in Halacha, to be able to say that that old won't stick well to new. He can have other arguments, as we'll go on to say, but maybe that's not a valid argument. He could have other arguments, for example. That's the way that Rambam writes it. I'm not sure if it's brought that way in Shulchan Aruch. But, for example, I mean, again, if the guy's living in the house, he has a valid claim anyway. I'd have to move out. The Rambam brings that other point, that if he's living there, we can say, you know, I don't want to have the hassle of moving out. Yeah. Amalei. So the other one still doesn't give up. He says, he really wanted his wall, I guess. Sasarnala ad la'ara. Fine, I'll tear down this wall all the way to the ground. Uvaninala. I'll rebuild the wall from the ground up. And I'll make windows for you high up in that new wall. Amalei, so he says, no. Yes, but one new wall, when the rest of the house is old, it's still not going to be stable.
He wants him to rebuild the whole house.
Amalei, so now the guy gives his final offer. Not his final offer, but wait. I'll tear down the whole building. And then I'll build you windows.
This wall must have been a very, very expensive wall.
I guess so, yeah. Amalei, so the guy says, yes, but then I'm not going to have a place to live meanwhile. Amalei, I give you a lachadukta. So the other one says, okay, I'll rent you a place. Amalei, le tarachna. And the first one says, I can't be bothered to move out.
Why didn't
you
give this
answer
to
Rav
Chama
before? Because we'll see in a second. Wait. Amar Rav Chama. So Rav Chama says, that person who owns the window has a valid claim. Again, you cannot say it's Kofin al Midas Sodom. You have to say he has a valid claim, and you're going to have to make the other guy tear down his wall and move it. So the question is, isn't this the same as the previous case, basically? We're saying that, the question isn't why Rav Chama had to paskin in both cases. Obviously, there were two different cases that were brought to him. He had to paskin on each one. But why did the Masadre have Gemara, why did Ravina and Ravashi and the Chachamim before them have to bring both these cases when it's obvious that you can derive one from the other? Tosfos points out on the face of it, you can't really, because in our case, you have this chiddush about business that a wall is partly new and partly old, or one new wall in an old house or whatever.
Right.
Tosfos says, on the other hand, no, because Tosfos says these facts are very obvious. It's very obvious that the guy could have such claims. So still, there's no reason to bring in the whole story. So why do we need the second case?
Right.
The answer is Hakamash Malon, the Chiddush of the second case. The reason why we have to bring it in the Gemara is the Afal Gabdolei Mishtamish Elativne Obeit Sivi Ba'alma. Even if he's not using it to actually live in, even if he only uses it as a storehouse for wood or straw, he can still argue, Lo Tarachna, I cannot be bothered to move all my stuff. Now, however, though, if the house was empty.
Even as a warehouse.
So, some Mepharshim say, therefore, that if it was taka empty, then you taka could force him, because then it's kofin al midas dom. What are you, on the other hand, I think that Amar says, for even in that case, you can't make a person tear down his building without a valid reason. In this case, just because you want to build a wall, just because you want to build a new wall there, is not considered a valid enough reason to make the guy tear down his building. I think they also talk about maybe what if, for example, he's saying, Lo tarachna, I don't want to be bothered to move all my stuff. What if the other guy were to offer to hire people to carry out all the wood and straw and whatever? Maybe that would be.
I know you're not going to steal stuff.
No, you hire honest workers, you know. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right. Another case. There were these two brothers, Depaugi Bahadi Adodi. They divided their father's inheritance with each other. Chad Matya Isplida, Chad Matya Tarbitsa. One of them wound up getting an Isplida, and one wound up getting a Tarbitsa. An Isplida, so Rashi explains Isplida as Traklin Yafe, is a beautiful hall. Tosfos brings two other explanations. One is, he quotes from the Aruch that it means a cave, which actually there's a similar word in Greek that does mean a cave, so maybe that's where the Aruch figured that it means.
A splitter.
The Oruch translates it as a cave, and in fact, the Tosfos brings from Targum on Tilim, the Vorchem Ipnei Shol Ba'Ma'ara, the capital Tilim that David composed when he was hiring for Shol in the cave, the Targum translates the word Ma'ara as Isfluda. Tosfos asks on that, because we're going to see soon that this thing was a constructed building, a cave is not constructed, and a couple of other problems. Tosfos themselves gives a third explanation, that the Isfluda over here is another word for an Achsadra. An Achsadra is an area that is, it has walls on three sides. It's completely open on the fourth, like a portico. Yeah, we had it in Erevin many times. We had it in various places sporadically since then, yeah. So it's the kind of thing that has a lot of natural light. which, as we'll see in the story, that natural light was being blocked. So one had that, and the other one had the chavitza, which means the garden near this building. Ozalahu demati chavitza. So the one who owned the garden went. Kabani ashisa puma deisplida. He started building a wall in front of the esplida, in front of the building. Amalei, so the one who owns the building says, "Kamal salta alai. What are you doing? You're darkening my building. You're ruining my building by making it dark." So again, Tosfos explains, we're not talking about, the situation is like this, Tosfos says. The good thing about having the Yisblidja was, because it's completely open on one side, therefore he was able to look out and to look out to his fields that are you have the Yisblidja, you have the Gina, and then you have the Tabitha, and then you have his fields further out. So he's able to look out and see them. Now by building the wall, that's being blocked. He still has, there's still light in there. It's not like the thing is totally dark, but it's still not as much light. He loses his view, and it's not as much light as you would expect an Asadra to have. Okay. That's Tosfos. Anyway. Okay.
The Splita is a hole.
So according to...
So how does it have a window?
No, so according to Tosfos, according to Rashi, it's a hole. According to the Oracle, it's a cave. And according to Tosfos, according to the Rishon Tosfos, it's a porch, kind of. It's closed in on three sides and open on the fourth.
So according to Rashi,
it's a hole that now some of the windows are being blocked. Amalei,
like a cave dwelling.
No, that's it. Come out like a cave, kind of, yeah. Amalei, so the one who owns the garden says, "What says it's not my problem, but didi kabanina. I'm building on my own property. I'm entitled." Amar Rav Chama b'din kamalei. So Rav Chama says, that, again, this is why we're bringing in all these stories one after the other, because they all involve Rav Chama paskening on it. Rav Chama says he has a valid point. Now why does he have a valid point? Rashi says because if the one who owned the Ispalida had already had it for 3 years, then he would have a chazaka that he's entitled to that light. Now that it's less than three years, they only just split the property, he doesn't yet have that chazaka. Other Rishonim learn differently because we talked yesterday.
Doesn't matter.
He owns the Ispalida, but the other guy owns his own property. So the different other Rishonim talk about different other possibilities, and we said in a split is either a big hole or a porch kind of anyway. So some other Rishonim learn you don't need 3 years for such a chazaka. Rather, they say the difference is that the difference is if you actually built a house or something or bought it or whatever, it would be different. But like this, you inherited it, you didn't do anything for it. Therefore, not necessarily. Rashi says you need 3 years, but those other Rishonim would say not necessarily you need 3 years, but still you have to have done something to establish that chazaka, and here it wasn't done. When their father was alive, fine, he owned both the Isplida and the Tibitza, fine, but now nothing has been done.
What should have been done?
Let's say, for example, he had fixed it up a little bit. Yeah, whatever. Now, why is this any different than a case that we learn in a Braisa as follows? Shnei Achen Shechoku, if two brothers divide up their father's property, Echad Mehem Notal Soda Kerem, one of them gets the vineyard, Ve'echad Mehem Notal Soda Lavan, the other one gets a field of grain. Soda Lavan means grain. It means grain, but actually we're going to see in a second, it's not necessarily talking about grain, because you can't have that too close to vines anyway, and we're going to probably be talking about that they're close together, but we're talking about, for example, it's a field of beans, or not beans, those are also, no, various other kinds of non-Kalayim stuff, let's say, yeah.
Such as, for example,
Kalayim would be that you're not allowed to have grain and grapes near each other. We learned that the other day. But there's different kind of things that could be. I mean, it's a, they love them, so it's not trees, but it's some kind of plants where there's no problem of kalayim between them and grapes. So, Yeshle Labala Kedem Dalat Amos Bisday Lavan, the one who owns the vineyard is entitled to an easement of 4 amos in the grain field, Shamanaf Ken Chokul, because that was the condition when they divided it, because in those times they usually did their plowing with using oxen. The one who owns the vines can't have his oxen go between the vines to plow. As we learned in Bava Metzia, the oxen themselves will get damaged, and so will the vines. Necessarily, he has to have them go around in a four-armor wide area next to the vineyard. Therefore, he's entitled to that easement. Shamanach Ken Choko, because that was the condition when they originally divided it. So by the same logic over here, when they divided and one got the Iskalida and one got the Tibitza, on the face of it, the condition was going to be that the one who has the Iskalida is going to be entitled to his full natural light and his view, according to Tosfos. Why should the other guy have the ability to take it away from him? Amale, so Ravashi answers, Hasam da'alu lahadadi. There we're talking about the case of the vineyard and the field. It's talking about they evaluated the respective values of them. They said, for example, that you know the vineyard is worth X amount, the field is worth a different amount. Let's say, for example, the vineyard is worth more. I will compensate you for that difference for the fact that I'm getting a larger part of the estate.
The amramas, you mean?
That will include, therefore, so now once he's buying the full kerem, he's entitled to the area, to the full amramas easement, because that's part of the kerem, that's considered part of the necessities of the kerem. So the question is, so what are we talking about over here? They just said, I'll take the splitter, and the other guy says, I'll take the tabitza, without figuring out the respective values. Are we talking about idiots? The high shokel splitter, the high shokel tabitza, that one's going to take the splitter, the other one's going to take the tabitza, and they won't even figure out the respective values. Obviously, the splitter is going to be worth a lot more than a tabitza. So obviously then, the one who owns the tabitza, the one who owns the splitter, rather, must have compensated
the view.
Just because in a splitter, it's a building. It's worth a lot more. Even according to the article, it's a cave still. It's a lot more than an empty space which can just be used for a garden. So therefore, on the face of it, the one who owns the splitter will have the whole figured out. The splitter is worth, the splitter is worth a million. The gina is worth 500,000. So therefore, I'll compensate you for the difference. For the fact that you got a smaller portion of the estate, and in that case, then it means I bought the full splitter with everything that it needs, including the view and including the lights and everything. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers him, Nehida alu lahadadi dmei livni kshuri v'hudri. Yes, fine, okay, they figured out the value of the splitter. They figured out the value of the actual material that it was constructed out of, maybe. They figured out the value of the bricks and the heavy beams and the light beams. They did not necessarily take into consideration when they figured out the value of the splitter, the fact that it has a view and the fact that it has a certain amount of light, whatever. Yeah, so they didn't. Some of Farshim say, actually, that would only be if they themselves did the evaluation. The proper thing to do is, when you evaluate, normally you do take that into, you do take intangibles like that into consideration. If they had Beis Din do it, for example, we can expect that Beis Din did a proper evaluation. But if they themselves decided to do it on their own, then yeah. Okay. The question is now, Valemule, Meikra is splitter palgasli. Fine. Still, why can't the one person argue? Originally, the deal was that I'm going to get an splitter. Hashtem Shabbosli Idiruna. Now, by making this wall over here, you turned it from an splitter into something else. Now it's a dark room. The whole reason I paid extra is for an splitter. Yes, I only paid for the actual beams and whatnot that it's made out of, but still, I paid for something called an splitter. Now it's not going to be, which has to have a view and has to have light, whatever. Now it doesn't have that anymore. Amar Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, Shma Ba'am Apologai. So Rav Shimi Ba'ashi answers yes, but the other one can answer that all it is fine. You got something which is called an Ispalida. Yes, a normal Ispalida has a view and has light, whatever, but as long as it has the name Ispalida and that it still has, then you can't say that you got something, that you got the wrong thing. Milai Tanya, because he says, isn't it similar to the way we learn in a Braisa? If one person says to the other, I am selling you a base core of land, a base core is an area 75,000 square amas, so I don't know, about half a city block, I think. So he sells him that. Even if it turns out that the plot of land is only a lesech, which is half a core, he gioi, nevertheless, it's a done deal. Because we can say the seller can argue, all I sold you is something which is known as a base core. Behuda, mystery base core, as long as it is, as long as people in town call it a base core. Why they call it?
So he pays for a base core and he gets the lesser?
He gets less. However, we can say. So Tosfos talks about that. Because Tosfos talks about, let's say the buyer knows that the seller has a plot of land which everybody calls a base core. So therefore, when he went and bought, the guy tells him, I'm selling you a base core. The lekeach should have thought to ask, do you mean literally a base core, or do you mean this plot of land of yours, which may be 75 years ago?
No.
The answer, that's the thing. If he didn't know that the other guy has a plot of land called, that even has the name base core, then it would be a mekachtos. But yeah. Like this, where he has such a thing, then the argument can be, the buyer can say, okay, I bought it thinking that you're going to, thinking, okay, right now you're showing me an area that's only a lesef. However, since you said base kur, I assumed you're going to give me another lesef to make it up to a full kur. However, since the seller can say, yes, but you should have realized to begin with that this particular plot of land has always been called by everybody in town base kur, then you don't have a claim to anything else beyond that.
Assuming then that he didn't check it, basically.
Well,
he bought it without checking.
Essentially, he bought it, he looked, he saw that it was only a lesser, but he thought it meant I'm buying a lesser now, yeah. And you'll give me a lesser, and you'll give me a lesser later. And now it turns out he should have realized that everybody in town calls it, yeah, basically. So as long as it's called a base course. Similarly, paradis ani merchalach. If one person says to the other, I'm selling you a paradis, which means an orchard where pomegranates grow, even if there are no actual pomegranate seeds in it, the deal is valid. Because all he sold them is a name. And again, as long as everybody in town calls it a paradis, which again, they might call it that because maybe 75 years ago there was a paradis here. Maybe it's a place that's suitable for a paradis, whatever it is. But it's a place that's called a paradis, even if right now it doesn't have any pomegranate trees in it.
There's a place in Frankfurt that they call the casino because there was a casino built there and it burned the next year. But for the next 50 years, they call it the casino.
There you go. So that would be an example.
Yeah, sure.
In the future, or
yeah, it could mean that it has the possibility to be a paradis in the future. Yeah. Yeah, you're mentioning about the price. Tosfos talks about that. Let's say, for example, we're talking about suppose he paid, the first case of a base score, suppose the price he paid was less even than you would normally pay for a lesson. So we can't say, in other words, well, hadamin magim, the price demonstrates that I only pay, that the price demonstrates that I was only going to give you a lesser, because it's even less than a lesser. You could argue I'm buying at a discount. Yeah. Okay.
And so?
So therefore, they can't prove anything from the price. Similar, the kerem ani merchalach, if one says to the other, I'm going to sell you a vineyard, ach b'shein b'gfanim, even though there's no vines in it, higiyah, it's still a done deal, shalom macholay al-shma, because all he told him is the name, u'udim iskri kamra, because it's called a vineyard. So the same logic over here, the thing is still called an istalida, I normally an istalida has light and a view and whatever, and this one doesn't, fine, but it still has a name istalida. Now, the Rashba and some other Rishonim ask the question, how is it comparable? In the case of, let's say, for example, if I were to say I'm selling you a paradise, and let's say it has pomegranate trees in it, I can't very well go after I sold it to you and rip out the pomegranate trees. Isn't that the same thing as the guy putting up the wall over here?
Right, right.
And the answer is no, because after all, he is building the wall on his own property. The fact that it's blocking the other guy's light is sort of an indirect side effect. It's sort of a side effect. So therefore, it is somewhat similar. It's not a total comparison, but it's a similar concept. In other words, that when you took it, it had the name of Iskalida, and what I'm doing over here is not taking away that name of Iskalida, as opposed to actually going to be mazik, be a dying, to actually go pull out the trees from your karka. Yeah, obviously that would be different. All right. Still, the Gemara asks me, Dami, still, how can you compare it? After all, over there, sure, the mocher has the ability in those cases to say that I sold you something which is known in town as a base core or known as a paradis or what have you. Here, why shouldn't the one who owns this splitter be able to say, still, when we originally split up the inheritance, I did it with the understanding that I should be able to continue living in it and using it just as our fathers did. When our fathers lived, right. When our father and his father and whatever lived here, there was no wall. Why should you be able to change that status quo? So, Maryunuka and Makshisha, the sons of Rav Chisda, said to Ravashi, we talked about before, Tosis mentioned it briefly over here, that they both had the same name. There were two sons of Rav Chisda who both had the same name, but one was born when Rav Chisda was younger and the other one who was older. So Tosfos over here explains Maryunuka is the older one.
Right.
He was born when Rav Chisda is young, Yunuka.
Right.
Therefore, he's called Maryunuka. Makshisha was the younger one and was born when he was older. Rashi and Ksubas learns the other way around. Yeah. Anyway, they tell Rav Ashi, Nahavdoi v'taymayu. You should know that in this din, Rav Chama, who is from Nahavda, goes according to the same shita as his landsman, as Shmuel, who was also from Nahavda. Namely, the Omer of Nachman Omer Shmuel, Ha'achan Shechoku, when two brothers divide up the estate, Ein Lahan Loid Derech Zalzeh, one of them does not have the ability to claim a path from the other. Meaning, Rashi gives an example like this. Let's say, for example, so they have two fields. One took the north field, one took the south field. Now, let's say, for example, when their father was alive, he would have a path through one field to go to the other one. Now that each of them has a separate field, the one who has the inner field, let's say, does not have the ability to say, well, automatically then by buying the field, by inheriting, by taking the inner field, I automatically get an easement through your field to be able to go to mine. No, we don't say that. The other one has the ability
because
to say, even if the father had it.
Because he had both.
Because the father had both, but now that they belong to separate people, the one on the outside has the ability to say, Tosfos explains it over here, Shmuel holds of a concept that we're going to learn later on in the Masechta. We're going to talk about this concept in more detail. When a person sells something, it's called Mocher Ba'ayin Yafa Mocher or Mocher Ba'ayin Ra Mocher. When a person sells, does he sell generously, including everything possible, or does he sell Ba'ayin Ra, does he sell stingily, only including the minimum amount? If we take the view, and Shmuel does, that Mocher Ba'ayin Yafa Mocher, then what it comes out is over here, when they divided the estate, which is considered like they bought it from each other, so the one on the inside effectively sold all his rights to the outer field to his brother in return for the inner field. Well, selling all his rights, including he sold his easement, his right of way. You want to weigh in? Fine, pay me, and I'll give you an easement through the field.
Buy the easement back.
Buy the easement back, basically. Yeah. But okay, so
right.
Yeah, but he by giving up his rights to the outer one, he means that he gave up his rights to the path.
Right.
It would be nice if he gives it to him, but he's not obligated to lava. But like Haloinus Zelzeh, similarly they don't have what unless he pays for it. Yeah. Also they don't have a claim to windows against each other. So Rashi says that's referring to what we were talking about. One of them has a window in his wall. The other one wants to build a wall to block it. He has the ability to do it. Because they don't have a chazakah yet. The Rambam actually explains.
This was in Nahardah.
No, they were saying the Nahardah, the Chachamim of Nahardah, go according to their shitta. That's why Rav Chama passed in that way.
Yeah.
Because he holds according to Shmuel. Halacha doesn't change from one place to another, unless otherwise. No, we're not saying it's Minigam Adinah. We're saying that the Chachamim of Nahardah, this is how they paskin. One of those Chachamim of Nahardah is Shmuel. The Halacha is usually Rav Shmuel and Dinim Omanit. Rav Chama was following that precedent when he passed in this way. The Rambam, by the way, understands this v'loi chaloinus zalzeh even more so, that if one of them argues to the other, hey, you have the house, but I have the chaser, Hezekiah, close up your window to prevent Hezekiah, that's a valid claim. V'loi salamus zalzeh, also one does not have a claim for a ladder against the other, meaning, so Rashi says, let's say, for example, one of them got the house and the chaser, the other one got the second floor. He's going to need a ladder to climb up to his second floor, to his apartment. He can't put one without the other guy's permission. Tosfos explains
without
a little
the
bit without the lower guy's permission. Tosfos explains a little bit differently that it means that, let's say, so the one got the house, the other one got the second floor and the chotzer. So fine, he can put a ladder in the chotzer, it belongs to him, but he doesn't have the right to put that ladder against the other guy's wall without his permission. Because the lower part of the wall belongs to the other guy. Again, Mefarshim talk about various nuances in this. Maybe if, for example, the Ramban, I think, says that if there was a ladder there while the father was alive, a permanent ladder, sure, of course, it's left there. The other guy doesn't have the ability to say, let's take it away. But to put a ladder there that wasn't before, let's say the father only had a temporary ladder, or a step ladder, which he moves every time, and the other guy wants to convert it to a permanent ladder, that he can't do. Similarly, one does not have a claim to a stream of water from the other one. So like to say, for example, I need to water my field. I'm going to dig a canal through your field to bring water to mine. Can't do that. And Shmuel said on this, be careful with all these halachas, because these are all fixed, established halachas. So therefore, the Chama is passing and going to that. Therefore, that the one can build the wall and block the other one. However, Rav disagrees with all that. He says they do have claims of the ability to have chazaka one against the other, because Tosfos says Rav would hold mocher ba'ayin ra mocher. When you sell something, you sell the minimum possible that will go into it. Therefore, for example, the one who got the inner field did not necessarily mean to give up his right of way through the other one's field. He didn't include that in the sale. Similarly with all the other cases. Therefore, no. One can't block the other from going through his field or putting up a ladder or what have you.
But at the end, yeah.
Again, the halacha is like Shmuel, yeah. Okay.
Mm.
break for Myriv, and then we will have a senior master Myriv. Jim?
What's your? Nice.